Now, while you were at NBS, I believe it was NBS, you were doing work on the Federal Information Locator System.
Yeah, that was a
Skills, which led to Guild.
Yeah, that was a contract after when I was a consultant.
Oh, it was.
Yeah,
okay.
I was asked to come back to the bureau and as a consultant. Usually, when you go back to work for your agency, you go as a retired annuitant, and they pay you the difference between what you're getting as an annuitant and what you would get if you were full-time,
mm-hmm.
some
mm-hmm.
arrangement like that. But these people were able to get me just on strictly on a contract, and I contributed to the discussion of the need for standardized vocabulary in the fills, and brought to their attention a number of thesauri that were already in use in government agencies, and recommended their adoption of one of those as a way to control the vocabulary
mm-hmm.
of
mm-hmm.
the people who were filling out the fills.
Was the fills thing an already ongoing thing by the time you became involved?
It was, I think, a fairly well developed but not improvement of the federal locator system.
No.
It wasn't being used as it should be, and one reason was that people didn't think they could find things or hated to be
mm-hmm.
to be bothered with. But this is what we said, was that one of the Bureau standards was reviewing the system, the hardware and software system, and I was reviewing the content of the
mm-hmm.
system.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you another story. Years ago, when I was first at the Bureau of Standards, a friend who was hardware-oriented, a computer type, and I went to visit the ERIC system with Ted Brandhorst. I think he asked for some advice or something. And we went down and talked to him, and she talked about the tape format for the system, and I talked about the data elements. And when we get out, she said, "What were you talking about? That was, you know, that had nothing to do with it." And I said, "I thought we were perfect complements, because you were telling him how to input, and I was telling him what to input." But there was a problem early on with computer types not really understanding what it was, and that I think that's part of the difference that I had with Henriette Avram. We agreed on how to input,
mm-hmm.
but we didn't agree on what to input.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And my contention was that there didn't have to be only one way. If we knew how to input, then we could talk to each other.
And probably this kind of miscommunication or concentration on different areas has caused a lot of troubles in terms of the computer folks and the information folks talking.
I believe that when the library community was trying to get into the use of computers and had to go to the computer people, like in an agency or in a company, and say, "I want some time on the computer, and this is what I want," that it was very hard to talk the same language.
Mm-hmm.
And especially if the library types didn't really have any idea how to do it. They just knew what they wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And the computer types wanted to translate that into how to do it, you know. It was fairly difficult. It's not so bad now when you on a LAN or through a modem can communicate directly with the machine,
mm-hmm.
you know, if
mm-hmm.
you know that it's got the programs to work with you,
mm-hmm.
Or if you can get time to input a program of your own, or you've got a workstation instead of just a. I can remember when we first got consoles or CRTs in the offices at the Bureau of Standards. We were hardwired to the mainframe in the basement of the administration building, and we thought, isn't this great? Instead of carrying over a tray of cards, you know, or a little package of cards with instructions or a request or whatever you had to fill out, we can access the computer directly. Every office in the Institute for Computer Sciences had a CRT.
And what year was this? Do you remember? Now you started there in 1964.
Yeah, 1970s.
Was it
sometime?
That late?
Yes, uh-huh. It was. We had access to the computer, but we didn't have these were just CRTs hardwired.
Dumb terminals.
And I can remember walking down the hall and looking in the offices, and there were the engineers sitting there banging away on their keyboards, you know, and just having a grand time. And I thought, you know, if we told them they had to type their documents, they'd be horrified. That's not my work.
Probably true.
But you give them a chance to...
You've said something a while ago that piqued my interest. You said when trying to decide what kind of additional education to get, that you were pretty sure you didn't want to go to the library science route. Was this something you looked into? Did you go talk to folks at Catholic, or because you were taking courses in Maryland?
Yes, but this was in before there were schools of library and information science. Mm-hmm. And I don't know whether I talked to somebody or got the idea, and it could have been a completely erroneous idea, but I didn't think that I needed to learn how to lay out catalog cards.
Mm-hmm.
Not what to put on the cards, but how to put it on the cards, okay? And the technical processing to some extent, but a lot of the library, the more, you know, the older based library studies, I didn't think I wanted. No, I didn't go and talk to somebody at a school and say, what can you, what?
And you must have, did you have something of a similar reaction when you started taking the computer science courses? Because you said
yes,
that you didn't want to know the inner workings
yes,
of the machine.
Yes, I found that they were too technical about the inner workings and the mechanics of the computer.
Mm-hmm.
Than I felt I needed to know. I kind of straddled two fields, and at that point there weren't schools that straddled the two fields.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Let's talk a little bit more about ADI, ACES, and SLA. Now, you joined ACS really early, because
I thought
you were a 50-year member.
Yes.
When did you join ADI? Do you remember?
As soon as they made it open to individual members.
52, 53?
Yes.
Uh-huh. And what about SLA?
I never joined SLA. No.
Okay.
No, and you were saying earlier about technical, you know, special librarians in chemical industry.
Right.
And the early days special librarians were more nearly librarians than they were. They might have had a degree in chemistry, but they were primarily librarians running libraries.
Now, when you say early days, when do you mean?
50s and 60s, uh-huh. When I said that most of the activity was being done, most of systems development work was being done by sci-tech types,
mm-hmm.
or by chemists who wanted to improve their own you know, access to their own reports mm-hmm. and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But I think anymore, any librarian is more information scientist than unless it's perhaps a children's librarian, and even they have to be certainly aware of the available resources, mm-hmm. What they have available to mm-hmm. them to.
You'll still find very traditional programs, and then ones that are very much what I would call information science oriented.
Yeah.
For example, my school is pretty much a mixture of the two.
Yeah.
With more toward the traditional side than it is toward the information science side.
Okay.
So there are all kinds of variations.
Very out in
there.
Between, yeah.
Now, within ADI ACES over the years, you've had lots of offices, but never one of the top elected positions. Why is this?
I used to think that you waited for people to come to you and tell you that they wanted you to run for an office or they wanted to give you an award. And I have learned more recently that you have to do the pushing and the asking. Okay? I had a friend who was in the federal government who said, I got an in-grade award every year because I did the paperwork and got my boss to sign it. I thought you were supposed to wait for your boss to say, I think you deserve. So I never had the street smarts that pointed to some of the recognition that I might have sought, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. I the Watson Davis Award is an accurate reflection of my service to ACES, but it's all behind the scenes, you know? It's all things like writing columns in the bulletin and helping to edit the proceedings and helping to organize sessions, and some of my efforts fell through. I chaired the Luncheon for Pioneers at the Boston meeting. Lee Bonin and I had great ideas for publishing a report, a book from that luncheon, but it fell through partly because this was after I had retired from consulting, I think. Wasn't it 87 or sometime like
this
that?
This was for the 50th anniversary?
Yeah.
Uh-huh, 87.
And partly because the people that we relied on for reports from the individual tables didn't come through. And partly because Lee was, I think, slipping at that time. I don't remember what year she died, but she was not as active as she had been. And neither one of us had the resources in the form of staff, and I think she had maybe left Rhode Island at that point. She was living in Rhode Island, but had left the library school. I'm not sure.
Should she be on my pioneers list, in your view?
But she's dead now.
Man.
But she should. Yes, yeah, she
has,
was.
Has she had a significant influence on the
field? She was an educator. She was a teacher at library schools and was a significant. Made a significant contribution that way. She didn't do systems design, but what we said of Lee when she died was that Claire Schultz wrote her in memoriam piece for. for Jesus, and they were very good friends. I wrote a half a column for the Bulletin of Asus, and I pointed out that she was always trying to keep us on the right track by telling us that evolution, not revolution, was going to serve us well. And she was the one that said librarians and information specialists are trying to accomplish the same thing but using different language, and therefore not accomplishing as much as they could have been accomplishing.
Mm-hmm. Well, back to the positions, elected positions.
Yes, I didn't run. That's one reason I never,
Compare yourself with Mrs. Schultz, who seems to have been successful in the political end. Or did you all have different approaches to this, even though you were good friends? Was she a more political person?
I don't know. She was president of ADI, or ASIS, when? Do you
61,
remember?
62, 63, somewhere right in there.
And she won an award of merit, I think, didn't she? Or did she?
I don't remember that for sure.
Okay.
I know she was the first woman president.
She's the first woman president. And it was 61...
Either, I think 62.
62, yeah. Lee Bonert recommended her, nominated her or pushed her her presidency because she believed, like I did, that Claire is a very capable person and deserving of all the recognition she can get and so forth. If Lee had said anything to me at the time, well, I was in Okinawa, but sometime like that, even several years later, I might have agreed that I would like to be thought of in that way, but I never really pushed, and I think that you have to have in the first place gone up a few steps. For example, I served on several committees, but I was never on the board of directors. I was chairman of the local chapter, but way back when, the Potomac Valley chapter.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why. I never was asked to, and therefore I never pursued the idea.
Well, it takes a different kind of personality to push themselves forward.
Yes, and I don't think Claire Schultz would have done this probably without... It seems to me that I can remember Lee Bonert saying, we need a woman president, and I'm gonna try to get Claire Schultz to do it, or something like that.
I think she's... When I talked to her about this, I believe she said that Heumann was the person who nominated her.
Kyle Heumann? Uh-huh. Okay.
But Lee
Bonert, could have planned
I think she said that, right, that Lee Bonert also pushed it in some way. I've forgotten exactly how that happened. It's always a matter of interest to me. I think lots of folks talking about the politics of organizations and those folks who get elected, and it's maybe akin to what we say, we never elect the best person to be president of the U.S. either.
There you go.
And, so it's a
curiosity. I served as the secretary of the AAAS section on information computing, and that was because I was asked to do it. Larry Heilprin was the chairman at that time, and Joe Becker was the secretary before me, and he was on the West Coast and never got to meetings, and Larry said, it's time to nominate a new secretary. Will you run? And I said, yeah, I can do that. And I worked hard for 8 years and got a lot done, I thought. But then I decided it was time.
And this is how
it's,
you got...
It's much harder to be in one of those positions without office support. Mm-hmm. You know, people... Mm-hmm. I can take messages and get around to doing something about it. But with a secretary, for example, who will not only take the message but put the thing in the mail to somebody.
It makes a big difference,
yeah.
Now, this is how you got on the American Association for the Advancement of Science, because this is a nominated position also, isn't it, to be a fellow or...
The fellow of the AAAS came about because in... mid-50s, I would guess. Perry, let's see, fellow of the 64, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Sometime in that period, Perry and I were both active in the American Institute of Chemists, in addition to the American Chemical Society. Mm-hmm. And Perry, from his position, and because I was a part of his team, and I guess maybe Alan Kent too, I'm not sure, were nominated as fellows of the American Institute of Chemists. And the AAAS then said, well, if you're a fellow of an affiliated society, you're a fellow of us. So Dick used to say, you're a farce and a fake. The fellow of the AAAS and fellow of the AIC. But I've been a fellow since 64.
Yeah.
And I was the first woman chairman of a Gordon Research Conference.
Oh, right, yeah.
And I chaired a Engineering Foundation conference out at Asilomar in California, and then participated in a couple, helped to run a couple up in New Hampshire, the American, the Engineering Foundation. They never achieved the stature of the Gordon Conferences because the Gordon Conferences, at least in our minds, because the Gordon Conferences were chemical and... Yeah.
Well, the Watson Davis Award must have pleased you.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I was very pleased, and I was very pleased that Nancy Roderick presented me as the recipient because I consider her a good friend. Somebody reported to me later that Jean Garfield in the audience said, it's about time. And... I remember I said in my acceptance speech that I hope to devote. I hope that I would be active in ACES for a few more years. And somebody shouted, "Many years!" So it was. I was pleased with the award and with the reception. But as I say, I think it's an honest appreciation of all I've done for the society.
Mm. Lots of writing and editing,
yes,
over those years that,
yes,
represents hundreds of hours.
Yes, that
and nights and weekends.
That anniversary issue of the bulletin that we put together,
mm-hmm,
was a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of work.
Yes.
I still hear from Irene Resnick every once in a while.
Oh, do you?
Yeah. Someplace in Texas.
Yeah. In terms of those folks who impressed you the most in early documentation work, whom do you recall most strongly, or would you say had the greatest influence on the development of documentation and therefore information science?
Well, I think of the people that when we worked in Washington, for example, or were in and out of Washington frequently. I think of Mort Talbot with the Uniterm system and Doc Inc.
Mm-hmm.
He made private enterprise possible, if you will, or believable, because he made dark ink work.
Was he a likable person?
He was very aggressive. He and Calvin Moores and Jim Perry were kind of the trio of pioneers, the three different approaches to the same problem of those. And Calvin tended to be kind of defensive. Nobody gave him enough appreciation for what he was doing, didn't really pay that much attention, you know, and yet Calvin had some great ideas, and he was not able to present them as well and as forcefully as Mort, for example, who had a great idea of the unit term system of coordinate indexing that flew in the face pre-coordinated subject headings,
right.
You know, you coordinate them when you want them, if you want them, kind of thing. And he certainly sold his ideas. He would get he'd get contracts with agencies to set up a unit term system for one of their files or their collections, and then he'd hire the people from the agency to work for Doc Inc. so that they could go back in and do the work. No wonder he's successful. There are lots of people that I met. Saul Herner. I used to say that Saul Herner made a success of his business because he knew what he could do, and he did it. He didn't try to be all things to all people. He was good at certain phases of information processing and book writing and report writing and so forth, and he used to stick to that. I think this was maybe in contrast to my feeling that Mort Tauber was trying to be everything to everybody, and Saul was plugging along with his own little company and doing just fine. Gene Garfield has been a spark plug in our team in our world for a long time.
What do you mean by that?
He had good ideas, great ideas. He was aggressive, he was irritating sometimes, you know, abrasive, but he had good ideas. Current contents was simplicity personified, but it works. If you can read these tables of contents, you can decide, boy, I should look at that one. Well, that month, I do that when I come home from Florida, and we have 4 months' worth of science and chem engineering news piled up waiting for us, and I go through the tables of contents, you know? And I tear out an article if it looks interesting, and throw the rest of the book away, yeah.
Did you have many dealings with him over the years?
Yes. He and I have been very good friends. Mm. He took me to dinner at his house one time. Mm. I got the feeling that he thought, this is a nice girl, you know, my mother will like her. He's had a rough life, personally, but I think that he's certainly built quite an organization there in Philadelphia, had good people. That's a sign of a good manager. Gets good people working for him or her.
It's a big company.
Yes. And it's quoted everywhere, you know, ISI citation index results and studies of citation indexes, yeah. I never mentioned Father Busa in all this.
Yeah, I don't know that name.
Okay, Father Busa is a Jesuit from Rome who was who was...
Excuse me just a minute. Let me stop this.